It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
For 65 of my 81 years, I have spent at universities all over the country and all over the world. There is no more important event in those 65 years to turn universities away from being bastions of hatred and discrimination than this executive order being signed today. It is a game changer. It will go down in history as one of the most important events in the 2,000-year battle against anti-Semitism. Thank you, Mr. President. You did a great, great job. The people who helped you do this did a great, great job, and you will be remembered by history for all time for having signed this very important order. Thank you.
It's Sandy Rios with you. You're probably wondering, what am I? What is he talking about? That's the voice of Alan Dershowitz, and that was at a ceremony or one of those very many ceremonies that the president has is when he signs executive orders. He's done some great things. And this particular one yesterday was to stop this anti-Semitism on college campuses. It is getting out of control. I think it's driven a lot by Islamic students and also by just plain dumb American students who have been propagandized in their classrooms. And it's becoming worse and worse. And basically the executive order says if you want to get grants, government grants, you're going as a university and as an entity, you leaders in these universities are going to have to stop this anti-Semitism that's rising on college campuses. And that's why Alan Dershowitz was so excited. Robert Jeffers, pastor, First Baptist Church, Dallas, was there, and this is what he said.
It is true. I believe President Trump is the most pro-faith president in history when you look at what he has done for people of all faiths. And Mr. President, you know, Jewish and Christian believers alike believe what God said to Abraham in Genesis 12, that God would bless those who bless Israel and he would curse those who curse Israel. And I want to thank you, Mr. President, for being the kind of president who has the courage to stand up and be, when it comes to Israel, on the right side of history. But most importantly, you're on the right side of God, and that's why you are not going to fail, and we're going to stand behind you 100%. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you.
All right, so there were a lot of things happening in Washington yesterday. You knew that, right? Yesterday, of course, Michael Horowitz, the inspector general, delivered his testimony, I think 6 hours before the Senate Judiciary Committee. We're going to get to that. Yes, of course we are. But I want to tell you that last night, while we were like having dinner and an evening as families, the House Judiciary Committee was busy convening, doing what they call the markup on these articles of impeachment. And of course, Gerald Nadler was the chairman, and he made his impassioned plea that he says we cannot rely on an election to solve our problems when the president threatens the very integrity of that election. And he says the president poses an urgent threat to national security. Meanwhile, Doug Collins pushed back and he basically criticized the Democrats for calling the president of Ukraine a liar. He noted that Zelensky has repeatedly denied Trump ever pressured him and that the Democrats turned to Zelensky to call him a liar. Collins went on to say that to the Democrats in the Judiciary Committee, criticizing them for hosting a hearing with three anti-Trump law professors with no personal knowledge of any relevant conduct by the president. And there's a whole lot more, of course, that the meeting of that committee went on into the night. And it's amazing. I have to say, so they're going to be marking this thing up this morning. They're going to start at 9. They're going to continue at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time this morning, preparing their articles of impeachment. It is, of course, very controversial. And if you're keeping score of what this all means, There are 233 Democrats in the House. They need 216 to vote in favor of impeachment. 31 Democrats who are in districts that were carried by President Trump, who won in the 2018 election. I would argue because of the horrible candidates and the horrible campaign that was pushed by establishment Republicans. And so 31 Democrats won in those districts. Nancy Pelosi can only lose 17 of them and still get this impeachment vote. Now, let me just update you on kind of where we are in the country. This is maybe not proof. It's kind of an indicator. Abigail Spanberger, who won Dave Brat's seat in the 7th District of Virginia. Many of you listen from the 7th District of Virginia to this show. She had kind of a wild meeting, let's say, on Sunday when she started talking about impeachment. Lots of people really got upset with her. One man shouted, "It's a lie, it's a lie." Another said, "You've been trying to impeach this man since he got elected," and so on and so forth. And so she had her hands full in her particular district, and that's a bellwether. It's an idea, a sense of how Americans feel about this impeachment, especially in those 31 districts where Trump carried those districts. The polls are showing right now, and this is probably low, I'm just telling you, 50% oppose impeachment right now. And two Democrats, Colin Peterson of Minnesota and Jeff Van Drew of New Jersey, voted against starting the impeachment inquiry in October. And since then, others have sort of expressed hesitation. And they've been pushing for, you know, a vote of censorship in the House. And that's been pushed back by the left. So they've got their hands full. There's no question about it. I want to give you just a few headlines this morning. The Wall Street Journal editorial board wrote an article or an opinion, the title of which is "The Incredible Shrinking Impeachment. The Democratic grounds for ousting Trump are weak and damaging to constitutional norms." And then another article talking about how independents are more vocally becoming more and more impeachment skeptics. They see partisan bickering, hypocrisy, a waste of time. And then one last article I want to commend to you because it kind of echoes what I've been saying to you. It's written by David Blackman. He talks about during the lead up to the 2016 elections how he was so frustrated with Republicans. And gee, you think maybe I said something like that? I'm thinking so. And then he goes on to say, now that I've gotten that out of my system, the complaining about the establishment Republicans, here's why you Republican voters should be proud of your House members today. Because to a man and to a woman, they all did their jobs throughout the Democrat Soviet-style impeachment clown show. Texas Congressman Will Hurd had a shaky moment early on, but even he ended up coming around to realize that Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi were abusing their power like no one in the nation's capital had ever done before. And so I think he's right, and I just wanted to echo that. So now I want to move to, I'm hurrying. You know I am because I have to hurry because I need to get all of these things in for you. So the hearing took place yesterday with Michael Horowitz, the inspector general. We were all anticipating it. It was quite a day. Senator Graham was the good Senator Graham. There's nobody better than him when he's on point. And so he's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and this is how the first 2 minutes went down.
Our Crossfire Hurricane was probably the best name ever given to an investigation in the history of investigations, because I think that's what we wound up with, a crossfire and a hurricane. There's been a lot of media reports about your report before it was issued. And I remember reading all these headlines, lawful investigation with a few irregularities. Everything okay, low-level people kind of got off track. If that's what you get out of this report, you clearly didn't read it. If that's your takeaway, that this thing was lawfully predicated, and that's the main point, you missed the entire report. How do you get a headline like that? That's what you want it to be. You want it to be that and nothing more. And I can assure you, if this had been a Democratic president going through what President Trump had gone through, that would not have been the headline. The headline would be, "The FBI takes law into its own hands. Biased agents cut corners. Lie to court. Ignore exoneration." So the first thing I want you to know is how the cake is baked here. And my goal is to make sure that people, when this is over, whether you like Trump, hate Trump, don't care about Trump, you look at this as more than a few irregularities. Because if this becomes a few irregularities in America, then God help us all.
All right, that was Senator Graham, and he spoke for 40 minutes and was fascinating because he actually ended up reading many of the email back and forth between Peter Strzok, who was the FBI agent really at the center of almost all of this, and Lisa Page, who was an attorney, who FBI attorney who worked for Andrew McCabe and was having an affair with Peter Strzok. You know that. I'm sure by now all of us know that. And so Senator Graham read their back and forths, showing how much they hated President Trump, their language, it was not just one statement. It was over and over again. We have to take him down. We have to stop him. We'll stop him. We're not going to let this happen. We have an insurance policy. And plus various other, even more, I think, salacious and pretty disturbing conversations. And Lindsey Graham was trying to prove in the presence of the Inspector General that although the media is taking from the Inspector General's report, focusing on his statement that he could find no political bias, Senator Graham was proving in living color and in words, the actual words of FBI personnel involved in this, how much they hated President Trump. And his conclusion is, nobody may have written down, I did all of these actions because I didn't want President Trump to win and I wanted Hillary Clinton to win because I hate him. Nobody wrote that. They kind of did in a way. And so Lindsey Graham was probably, I think, in a way, really sticking it to Michael Horowitz. Said, are you kidding me? He made the point very clearly in the opening statement. It was so effective that I was surprised to hear, and I'll play this for you, MSNBC and CNN, actually, but in their various ways, had to own up to the fact that it was a really, really bad day for the FBI and the Justice Department. Let's hear Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC just to illustrate this. Clip 16.
But there were very clear mistakes made by the FBI in the first approval and subsequent reapprovals, submissions for authorization by the FISA court, that special security judge who approves surveillance. And a particular point is something that is pretty egregious, which is the altering of a document to not inform the court and to not inform others that Carter Page, who was a former Trump campaign associate of the president's, was actually also at times a confidential source of the CIA. And to not share that information is pretty, which would have been very, obviously exculpatory, which might have led the judge to not approve the surveillance warrant on him.
All right. So Andrea is talking about one particular part of this report, which is pretty damning, because the inspector general, his job was to look at the FISA court and how the FBI handled their relationship with them. And the Carter Page part of this is, of course, he was the one that the FISA court got four warrants to violate, really, his privacy under the Fourth Amendment. And they did it based on false information. It's kind of spelled out a little bit better in clip 15. Let's listen to that.
If you wake up and there's the lawn is wet, you can assume it rained. If you got a guy who hates Trump's guts from day one, thinks Pence is stupid and everybody who voted for Trump's an idiot, and you give him power over Trump, maybe you're making a mistake. Or again, maybe, all these people who had these biases did nothing about it. Maybe, maybe not. It doesn't really matter. We know what they did. Is it fair to say that after January 2017, when the guy who gave Steele all the information disavows the dossier, that not only they should have told the court, they should have slowed down? Do you think the second and third warrants had a legal basis after that point?
We don't reach that conclusion, and I'm not going to.
Would you have submitted a warrant application as a lawyer?
Let me put it this way. I would not have submitted the one they put in.
Okay.
But no doubt about it. It had no business going in with that.
So what I want you to know is that in January 2017, the whole foundation for surveilling Carter Page collapses. Exculpatory information is ignored. They lie to the court about what the interview was all about. Is that a fair summary so far about the January 2017?
They certainly misled. It was misleading to the court.
Okay, fair enough. And in January, about 6 months later, when they find more information that could be helpful to Mr. Page, they lie about it. Do you feel like Mr. Page was treated fairly by the Department of Justice and the FBI?
I don't think the Department of Justice fairly treated these FISAs, and he was on the receiving end of the FISA.
You would not want to be on the receiving end of this, would you?
I would not want agents or anybody failing to put forward all the information they're obligated to tell the court on. I was in AUSA. I've seen what can happen.
I would be very comfortable with you investigating anybody.
All right, so that's just a tiny portion of what happened yesterday. And in a second, as soon as we take this break, I've asked my husband, who gave his life really to the FBI, poured his heart and soul into it, served as a special agent for almost 30 years, was an agent, one of those agents, one of the few that goes into that FISA court and presents the evidence. And he did that right after 9/11. When things were so tense. His experience with the FISA court is always a thing of interest to me, and when it comes up in this hearing and is discussed so much, I can't think of anyone with more expertise than my husband. And so my husband's going to join us next. We'll talk about what you just heard about Carter Page, about the FBI agent that altered information for the FISA court, the repercussions of that, and so much more. So please stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Such comfort. And yet, can you imagine having never read those words for yourself? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, and we've been engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years for $5 a Bible. You know, there are Christians in Asia, Africa, Europe, Latin America, and the Middle East who've never held a Bible in their own hands because of corrupt governments that oppress, majority religions that persecute, and other conditions related to living remotely and in extreme poverty. Some of these new believers, they memorize long stretches of Scripture, while others cherish the Word they heard preached on Sunday until they can gather again. They long for God's Word to hold in their hands and to cherish in their hearts as they grow in His grace and knowledge. Details on how you can be involved are at sendbiblesnow.com. That's sendbiblesnow.com or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Josephine King Olson, Director of the Peace Corps. She oversees the program that provides social and economic development abroad. Matthew 5:9 reminds us of the importance of creating peace in the world. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Josephine Olson as she leads the Peace Corps. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. 2020 Companion Prayer Journals now available at pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
Workers at St. John Properties in Baltimore were given a mighty big assignment in 2005. They had to develop 20 million square feet of office space across 8 states. 15 years later, they reached that goal, and company founder Edward St. John decided to reward his faithful employees. So, at the annual Christmas party, every worker received a red envelope, and inside that envelope was a life-changing gift. It turns out Mr. St. John doled out $10 million in bonuses. All 198 employees got a check, on average about $50,000, some as high as $250,000. Mr. St. John says he wanted to reward his staff's hard work and dedication, not because he had to, but because he wanted to. Capitalism and kindness at its very best. Be sure to check out my special Christmas interview with Oliver North on my Toddcast podcast. It's a free download at toddstarns.com.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning.
No evidence that the initiation of the investigation was motivated by political bias. It gets murkier. The question gets more challenging, Senator, when you get to the FISA.
I can tell you, when I was at DOJ, if someone said, let's tap Hillary Clinton or let's tap Bill Clinton or John Kerry, the people there would have said, what are you talking about? What was going on here? This wasn't Jason Bourne. This was Beavis and Butthead.
We concluded the current Department and FBI policies are not sufficient to ensure appropriate oversight and accountability.
Was as if J. Edgar Hoover came back to life. The old FBI, the FBI that had a chip on its shoulder and wanted to intimidate people and find out what was going on in your life.
All right, so that's a clip that was used by Fox, the panel last night, special report that we borrowed, and it featured Horowitz and Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz, and you get the idea. I've asked my husband, Bruce, former special agent for the FBI, to join me this morning. When I first met Bruce, it was his job as an FBI attorney to go into that FISA court in D.C. and present evidence in order to get surveillance. And Bruce, was it only for American citizens at the time?
It was for different groups, and some of them were composed of American citizens, others, and there could be other people from other countries, but it wasn't exclusively regarding American citizens. But that's who the protection is primarily aimed at through the FISA court.
Okay, for American citizens who happen to be caught up in this sweep or whatever.
Yeah. And actually, it's not just citizens. It's what they call U.S. persons.
Okay. All right, so you've been listening as I've been playing clips this morning, and you heard what Ted Cruz said about the alteration of that email. We should talk about that. That happened by this Kleinsmith. Tell us about that, and then how much of a breach that really was.
Well, the problem is that in a FISA application, it's only one-sided. In other words, you wouldn't want to go be accused of a crime and not be able to represent yourself. Well, that's what happens in the FISA court, is there's only one side being represented, and that's the government. So because of that, there has to be protections for people. And the protection is that the FBI is supposed to be scrupulously accurate in what they present to the court, so that the judge knows that he or she is being fair if they issue the warrant. In this case, the warrant was based on representations by the government that Carter Page was having illegal contacts with Russians, and that he was a part of the Trump campaign. Therefore, they needed to surveil Page to find out what kind of influence the Russians were exerting on the Trump campaign, which now we find out is a completely misaccurate representation. Carter Page was actually acting as a source for the CIA, and what that means is he was tasked with making contacts with Russians so that information could be gathered about the Russian potential collusion or attempts to influence our election. So
the FBI knew that.
And
FBI knew that.
What happened is this attorney, Kleinsmith, that works for the FBI, took an email that the CIA had provided the FBI saying that Carter Page was acting as a source for the CIA. And the attorney changed it to that Page was not acting as a source for the FBI, and that therefore these contacts with the Russians were possibly illegal and were resulting in being collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians.
Now, Bruce, in the real world, when you were doing this, you were one of those attorneys. What if you'd done that 20 years ago, right after 9/11?
Well, I was acting as an agent and working with the attorneys at FBI. And if we would have been suspected of doing that, I can tell you we would have been immediately investigated by the Office of Professional Standards, which is basically internal affairs for the FBI. I probably would have had my security clearance stripped from me, at least partially, or at least for a time until this was worked through. The FISA court would have had top FBI management in front of them wondering and asking questions as to why I was being allowed to present such information and why they had approved such things. I can tell you the house would have come down on
me. Yeah. Just to clarify, honey, you are an attorney, and you weren't acting in your attorney capacity?
No, I was presenting I was working with the FBI attorneys, and I was presenting it as the agent
okay.
that is testifying that all the information in the affidavit is accurate.
Okay. All right. And we need to also say that this Kleinsmith at the same time was going on social media publicly disparaging the president, disparaging Republicans. He said terrible things. I can smell something like that. Right. He said, I can smell them. He talked about Viva la Resistance. So it's not like he said, like, inadvertent error. He actually changed the wording so it looked like Carter Page was not working with the American government officially, well, unofficially, to try to get information from the Russians. He completely, so that four times they approved surveillance on Carter Page. And, honey, I want to stop for a second. I want to play something for you because this was Comey. He was not the FBI director. Mueller was your FBI director, but Comey is his protege. And they're very close. They did things pretty much badly the same way. James Comey said in an interview just in this past year, in regard to the FISA, this is what he said. Clip 17.
My understanding was his work started funded by Oppo Research, funded by Republicans. My understanding was the activity was begun, that Steele was hired to look into, was first funded by Republicans, then picked up, the important thing was picked up by Democrats opposed to Donald Trump. I don't know that the FISA application has been released. My recollection was it was part of a broader mosaic of facts that were laid before the FISA judge to obtain a FISA warrant.
There was a lot more than the dossier in the FISA application?
My recollection was there was a significant amount of additional material about Page and why there was probable cause to believe he was an agent of a foreign power. And the dossier was part of that, but was not all of it or a critical part of it, to my recollection.
We concluded that the Steele reporting played a central and essential role in the decision to seek a FISA order.
All right, so you have Comey saying the dossier didn't play central. Well, they had lots of other good evidence, and Carter Page, we knew for a fact, was working with the Russians. And then you have following that, Michael Horowitz say, we found that the dossier was central, and there wasn't hardly anything else in there.
Yeah, that was really a complete, everyone keeps saying, oh, these are misrepresentations or these are errors. That was a lie by James Comey.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you he knew what was in that FISA application, because you're going after basically the president of the United States or the president-elect or a candidate at that point. You can bet this thing was gone over and over and over as to what was going to be in it. And what's important to remember, people don't remember this, I don't think, is an application was submitted before the dossier was used. An application was made for this surveillance, and it was denied because there was not sufficient probable cause to give the warrant. Then the dossier information was added on the next application, and that was the first one that was granted.
You know, Bruce, this is something just occurred to me. We've both taken in so much information in the last 24 hours, but the person now we know who the Russian was who helped Christopher Steele gathered that information in Russia. Mm-hmm. I can't remember his name. I showed you yesterday a picture of him with Joe Biden. But
right.
the FBI started, once they found out he was the source, they contacted him and started interviewing him. And they reported that he was a very reliable source. But what they left out was that what he said to them was, Nothing in there is true. That was just rumors. I never meant for that to go in as truth. He said that was things I picked up in bars. That was rumors I read here and there. And so the FBI left that part out and just said they found he was very honest in that way.
The FBI actually interviewed that person on three separate occasions. And they never divulged to the court any of this exculpatory information that the information this source had gathered was what he called bar talk.
Yeah.
It was rumors. You know, you have to also remember, Christopher Steele has not been in Russia for over 20 years. And we're going to rely, basically what the FBI was relying on was hearsay information that Christopher Steele had gathered, allegedly gathered. We don't even know if he gathered it or if he just made it up. But I can tell you that is not the standard that the FISA court requires. Remember, the other side is not represented, so anything that the government puts forth as the truth better be the truth.
Yeah, I want to listen. This is another part of this. IG Horowitz kind of makes the point that his point is that it was just a handful of agents, and the upper echelon did not know. Ted Cruz takes him to task on that. I think this is clip 8, I think.
Reading from your report, in particular page 4 of the executive summary, your report says thereafter the Crossfire Hurricane team used the intrusive techniques, including confidential human sources, to interact and consensually record multiple conversations with Page and Papadopoulos, both before and after they were working for the Trump campaign, as well as on one occasion with a high-level Trump campaign official who was not the subject of the investigation. So they didn't place spies in the campaign, but they sent spies to record senior members of the campaign in the middle of a presidential campaign when that candidate was the nominee for the other major party that was the opposing party to the one in power. Is that right?
They send confidential human sources in to do those.
Did anyone at DOJ, who at DOJ knew about this? Did the Attorney General know about this? Did the White House know about this?
Based on what we found, nobody had been told in advance.
But once
nobody
it was happening,
knew about
it, did they know?
They did not. The only evidence that somebody knew were the line attorneys in NSD, in the National Security Division, when they were told very selective portions of what had occurred. Nobody knew beforehand. Nobody had been briefed, and frankly, that was one of the most concerning things here, is that nobody would needed to be told.
And I can tell you from my time at the Department of Justice and from my time in law enforcement, any responsible leader, when hearing that you're talking about sending in spies and sending in a wiretap on any presidential nominee, should say, what are we doing? And by the way, the people up the chain who are saying we didn't know, if you had responsible leadership, there's no more important decision than you make. I can tell you, when I was at DOJ, if someone said, let's tap Hillary Clinton, or let's tap Bill Clinton or John Kerry, the people there would have said, what are you talking about?
All right. Bruce, this is something you've said over and over again. Respond to that, if you will. We just have a minute.
Yeah. You do not go after people of this status, a presidential candidate, without getting orders from the absolute top. And no, there's no way. You have to have authorities granted, and the authorities come from above. You can't just be a line attorney, as Horowitz said, and get the authority to do something like this.
Doesn't Horowitz know that?
He does know that.
Why would he say that?
Because he's one of the gang. If you watched him testify yesterday, I never saw a guy parse words more than Michael Horowitz. I mean, it's been rumored from the beginning, look, he's on the Democrat side. He's going to do his investigation, but it's going to come out as best as it can for the Dems, and that's what he was trying to do yesterday, in my opinion. Every time he gave an answer, he just parsed words and tried to give it the best face his side would like.
You know, I know one piece of evidence myself that contradicts that. In the Lisa Page and Peter Strzok email, at one point, they said POTUS wants to know everything. Remember that email?
Yes.
Yeah, so
and
not,
POTUS was Barack Obama.
But POTUS was Barack Obama, so maybe Michael Horowitz missed that particular exchange, but anyway, my husband, of course, is a former special agent with the FBI and worked in the FISA court when I first met him. So we're going to continue this discussion. But at this point, I think it'd be good if you have a question or comment, something that you saw yesterday, give us a call, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Rejoice with those who rejoice. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Michael, a 5-year-old boy, showed up at the courthouse in Grand Rapids, Michigan, for an adoption hearing with his foster parents, and he had a crowd of unusual supporters. Michael's entire kindergarten class sat in the audience behind him, waving big red hearts mounted on wooden sticks to show their support. The kindergartners offered the most touching answers, standing up and telling the court, "I love Michael," or "Michael's my best friend." Michael's new father and mother had been married nearly 10 years, and he'd been living with them as a foster child for more than a year. Adoption truly is at the heart of the gospel.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hey, babe, I just finished up the Christmas list for the kids.
Cool. Just make sure you check out AFA's Naughty or Nice list to see what stores to avoid.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's showing that Walgreens is naughty.
Let me see. I see Walmart is still good.
Oh, but Walmart is always crowded.
Just think about the kids, babe.
Just think about the kids, babe. You're no help.
Find the AFA Naughty or Nice retailer list at AFA.net.
American Family Radio newscasts are now available as a podcast.
I'm Rusty Pugh.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Didn't catch the full story? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Chris Woodward.
I'm Chad Groening.
Didn't have the radio on at the top of the hour? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Charlie Bunch.
And I'm Fred Jackson.
Get accurate news from a Christian perspective whenever you want it with the American Family News podcast. You can also sign up for our daily news brief. Visit onenewsnow.com.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Michael Horowitz's Inspector General's report is like a 7.0 earthquake that has rocked the regressive cabal to its very core. His report has revealed what they thought they had buried, that FBI agents violated FBI protocol 51 times and included 9 outright lies in their official documents. If these rogue agents had listened to the words of Jesus, they could have saved themselves, their careers, and their reputations from public humiliation. For Jesus said in Luke 12, "What you have said in the dark will be heard in the daylight, and what you have whispered in the ear in the inner rooms will be proclaimed from the rooftops." But they thought they knew better and are now paying a bitter price for their treasonous behavior. If they didn't have a reason to follow the teachings of Jesus before, they sure do now.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. House Democrats increasingly justify the imminent impeachment of Donald Trump on the grounds that he damaged national security because he allegedly impeded the flow of U.S. military assistance to Ukraine. This is a big lie. Adolf Hitler and his Nazis used the technique to manipulate public perceptions by insistently repeating colossal untruths. Ironically, those most prominently perpetrating today's big lie have historically been strikingly disinterested in national security. Their present passion seems cynically political, not authentic. While giving Ukraine the wherewithal to defend itself against Russian invaders may not be a national security imperative, it is a good idea. President Trump deserves credit rather than impeachment for having repeatedly approved it, whereas his predecessor adamantly refused to do so. No Democrat is proposing to impeach Barack Obama post-presidency for thus harming the national security. None should use that pretext for impeaching his successor. This is Frank Affney.
Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The former FBI director James Comey said this week that your report vindicates him. Is that a fair assessment of your report?
I think the activities we found here don't vindicate anybody who touched this.
Okay. Director Comey, the reporter, is asking him, can I ask you a question on FISA abuse? It's a major issue for the Republicans. Do you have a total confidence in the dossier when you used it to secure a surveillance warrant and also in the subsequent renewals? This was asked in December of 2018, about a year ago. Comey, I have total confidence that the FISA process was followed, that the entire case was handled in a thoughtful, responsible way by DOJ and the FBI. I think the notion that FISA was abused here is nonsense. Would it be fair to say that you take issue with that statement?
Certainly our findings were that there were significant
problems.
So
when Comey speaks about FISA, you shouldn't listen. You should listen to Mr. Horowitz. He's not vindicated, and to be concerned about the FISA warrant process is not nonsense. Christopher Steele, is it fair to say that he had a political bias against Donald Trump?
Given who he was paid for, there was a bias that needed to be disclosed to the court.
Yeah, and he had a personal bias, too, which he didn't even go to. But Christopher Steele, we know that he hated President Trump. That's been testified to. Bruce, before we go to the phone lines, do you think Comey, he testified before Congress falsely in that way so many times. Is he under legal jeopardy?
Well, in theory, he is. I mean, it's well documented how many times he's lied under oath. Now, in practicality, that's the next step that is a long way away, probably, because somebody has to have the guts to go after him, whether it be the attorney general or a U.S. attorney under the attorney general. The thing that strikes me about that is, you know, Jim Comey is like a walking lie machine, in my opinion, to the media. But when it comes to being put under oath and investigated, he wants no part of that. Because what's interesting is when Jim Comey left the FBI or was fired from the FBI, he had the option of keeping his security clearance. A lot of people probably don't know when higher-ups, they call them senior executive service people, leave. Oftentimes, they're allowed to keep their security clearance so they can be their opinion can be sought by administrations. However, if you keep your security clearance, then you are under the jurisdiction of the inspector general if he decides to do an investigation. And isn't it interesting that Jim Comey, for a guy who loves his country so much and loves the FBI and wants to help, he declined to keep his security clearance. And I think we can draw an inference that the reason he did that was because he probably figured he might be subject to being interviewed by an investigator at some point as to what went on with this FISA
application. Wow, I did not know that. That reminds me of the story I reported yesterday, that in the hearings before Gerald Nadler and those four constitutional attorneys, he did not swear in the witnesses, Bruce.
That's right.
And that attorney, you know, one of them lied. He lied about that clip they played on President Trump that they edited that made it sound like President Trump said he had all authority under Article 2.
Their
testimony was false, and Gerald Nadler did not swear them in. That just never happened. So just an interesting loophole. We have a few people that would love to talk to you, Bruce. And I see up here there's a Jim in Virginia. Let's go to him first. Good morning, Jim. You guys, maybe this is not on the right setting. Can you get Jim for me? All right. Oh, hang on a second. What is the matter with me? I have to actually punch a button. That was me. I don't ever do this very often. I've forgotten how. Jim, I'm sorry. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, Jim. You have a question for Bruce.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating. We hear all the corruption that's in the government, especially the FBI. How would the president go about cleaning up the FBI? It seems like when he appoints somebody else to lead this FBI, Ray, it's no better than it was before. Can they just go in and fire all the brass and start over?
I couldn't agree with you more, Jim. I am so frustrated by the appointment of Christopher Wray as the new FBI director. If you trace Christopher Wray's roots, he goes all the way back with Mueller, Comey.
Sally Yates.
He is one of... it's easy to call it the swamp, but he's one of the good old boys that's been involved with these people. And if you look at what he has done or not done in response to the job he was given, it's astounding to me how little he has done. He has redacted documents when they were requested. He has refused to provide documents, hiding behind, oh, it's an open investigation. You know, you would think somebody that had inherited the mess he made or he got would have said, you know, I don't want any part of this. I am going to be the one that fixes this. I love this country. I'm going to fix it. Instead, you know, it's like those Geico commercials where it says being okay is not okay. I mean, this guy is so mediocre in the way he's addressing this. And in response to can they not fire the top brass, I will say it is very difficult in the government to clean house of the people that are embedded. You know, the director can be hired or fired at the pleasure of the president, really as anybody can be in the executive branch, but it's not common for people to be fired by the president who are lower level people. Yeah, that has to be done internally.
Yeah, but we're rooting for that. Jim, thanks for the question. You know, Bruce, I pointed out this week that President Trump really hit Christopher Wray hard in a tweet after he came out. What did he say after this? He's still defending the FBI, and he doesn't think there was any spying, and he's really contradicting the attorney general point blank, like going against his own attorney general, who is his boss, by the way.
Right.
I think that's pretty remarkable, don't you?
It's sad, really. This is really Christopher Wray sticking his head in the sand and hoping this all blows by and that they can all go back to the way it used to be. You know, it reminds me of when, I can't think of her name, the lady that was at the IRS when they were denying tax exempt status to 501c3 organizations. And it was so obvious that she was involved in this, and she blamed it on just a couple of rogue agents in Cincinnati. Lois Lerner.
Yeah.
And what happened with Lois Lerner? She finished out her time in the government, and she's collecting her pension. Yeah. And that's, I think, where we all have this frustration that, why isn't this changed?
Yeah. Well, I would say, Bruce, I believe, look, this is my assumption because of people that I think could make this happen. I think that this might be a turning point. I really do think the president's had a real wake-up call on the people that have been surrounding him from that Vindman that testified, working on the National Security Council. Some of us tried to warn the administration a year ago about the people that were in the White House serving them, undermining them. And it was like fell on a deaf ear. And I'm hoping that this will be a turning point. And even maybe with Christopher Wray, the president's willingness to call him out on a tweet, the first time he's ever done that, made me think that maybe there's some hope that he'll make a change. Let's go to also Virginia and talk to Joshua. Good morning, Joshua. You have a question?
Yes. How are you doing, Sandy, Bruce?
Good.
Good morning.
We're blessed,
good
Joshua.
Good morning. Yeah. Yes, amen. May Yahweh bless you both in the name of Yeshua. I'm really so excited to call it. Sandy, I always love listening to your show, and Bruce, it's good to have you on, hear your wisdom. I'm kind of echoing what Jim is saying, and it's like, I just want to know what we can do, because if it were me lying to the government, I would be in trouble. If I were speeding, I'd have to pay the price. No one would be scared to come and get me. And I know Bruce was talking about theoretical versus practical, but what is it that we can do? And the president's trying to do this. What can the people do? Because it's really the people. I mean, I know the liberals, they get together, they have these huge organized events, and they get enough protesting, they can change Chick-fil-A's mind, they can change anyone's mind. Who is it going to stand up on our end and get us organized, get us unified to where we can get out in the streets in a nonviolent way? And there's got to be something we can do, because it's just too much. Nobody's held to account. They can do whatever they want, and there's no repercussion. And it's just, we're wasting time talking about it if nothing's ever going to get done. And I just want us to have a practical solution. So
Joshua, you are expressing the frustration of at least half of America. There are two sets. There's two Americas. There really are. That's what's his face, Jim, the Edwards, the former presidential candidate, kept saying. And I always resented that, but he was right in many ways. But in this regard, it is that the elites in Washington have a totally different set of rules, totally different set of rules. And this will not stand in a country based on a constitution like ours. Joshua, I can't answer. I know I interviewed Bo Snerdly, who's James Golden, who is Rush Limbaugh's producer 2 days ago. And he's starting an organization to reach out to minority voters. We understand that the polls show that 37% of black voters are now supporting President Trump. Now, there's a reason for that. It's not an accident. And I think a lot of it is because many of you are, in your own way, are making a huge difference in ways you can't even imagine. I mean, look at the Wall Street Journal headline that I reported this morning that impeachment is collapsing. The polls are collapsing. That's why the Democrats have lost their wide-eyed smirks, because they really have stepped out on a limb. That doesn't mean this is going to end well. I am not predicting that. I don't feel safe about that yet, that it's going to end well. But I think we are having an effect. But I don't want to say that and then mute people doing something. My admonition always is, look around where you are and do something there. Who's running for Congress there? Can you go to their, like several people went to Spanberger's rally on Sunday in Virginia, and they let their voices be heard, and it made national news. And so there are things that you can do that don't require, you know, they can be done while you keep your normal life. And I just want people to get active, find out who the good candidates are, vote for them, start talking out loud. Don't be intimidated by your friends and neighbors. You can be kind, but you can stand your ground. And that has tremendous influence. People like courage. Courage follows courage. And so those are just a couple of things that come to my mind, Joshua. Thank you. Anything else, Bruce, that comes to your mind? We've just got a few minutes left. I would pass this one by you. One of the things we learned in the Horowitz testimony, that the FISA was only, the abuses we talked about were only extended to Carter Page. In other words, the illegal, really, what was illegal surveillance. The others, General Flynn, Manafort, George Papadopoulos, they were, and the others that we don't know about, were surveilled without that at all. And now we know that the Mueller team actually got computers, private email, all of this stuff through this attorney, Brandon Van Grek. The special counsel's office had all the Trump transition team's correspondence, their email, everything, and that they did not go through proper channels to get that. So I just want to know legally what you think about that. The special counsel illegally obtaining personal and private correspondence from citizens who were part of the Trump campaign for the purpose of their investigation without a warrant. How serious is that?
Well, I've never understood from the beginning of the Mueller report, basically, or the Mueller investigation, how they were doing some of the things they were doing. And you knew it had to be back-channel illegal things. This Andrew Weissman, who really, I think Mueller was more a figurehead. Now, that's not to excuse him. He has to know what's going on. But this Andrew Weissman had so many contacts in what we would call the deep state, and they were running around the rules, getting these records. And the thing is, I don't have proof of this, but again, you have to draw inferences. I would say that probably the illegal activity that was committed by the investigators and the attorneys in that Mueller investigation, we will never know, because that's sort of gone to the background now. But the way they went about their business, and you can bet they were not following the DOJ-approved rules. Yeah, just things I saw that they had, I'm like, I have no idea how they ever got those things.
Well, this Brandon Van Grek actually finally admitted. And so it is in writing that they illegally obtained these things. And so we'll hang on for that. Bruce, do you have any optimism in you this morning?
Oh, yes, I have optimism. I actually was very encouraged by the pushback by many of the people yesterday in that hearing. I think America's waking up that there's so much illegality that went on in this, and they're getting behind the president.
Yeah, I think so, too. Sandy Rios in the morning. Thank you, husband Bruce. Be back tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.